Welcome to the podcast for Empathy and Imagination. My name is Aubrey.
I am Drew Clark.
And this is the show where we discuss various topics and learn to empathize and imagine with you, each other, and our guests. Welcome back. This is episode 14.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here.
So, what do we got?
We got...
You say you had a gradient update?
I do. I want to talk about Gradient, my craft beer bar venture. So, if you've been a listener of this show for a while, you'll know what's going on. But if not, I'm going to give a little bit of fill-in. So, I was a flight attendant for 9 years. I worked for Southwest for more than a third of my lifetime. And I ended up putting into a 401k while I was employed there. And so now I have this little nest egg
yeah.
I've been trying to use to start Gradient. And I have a partner, and I have a vision and a business plan.
Gradient is the name of
my craft beer bar. And the Gradient has, of course, to do with the gradients of beer we will serve, but also the gradients of people invited and the gradient of experience, the duality and the poetic way of becoming peaceful without answers. And by that I mean having two opposing or seemingly opposing views in your head at once, and you can operate with both of them without needing to find a solution, and there can be peace in that.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, another guy I know talks about similar stuff. His name's Aubrey.
Hamlet is the ultimate manifestation of holding two ideas in one's head simultaneously and being able to entertain both of them. So was there a moment when you decided Gradient would be the name?
Yeah, I remember the first round of partners I had for this project over 4 years ago. Well, we had a huge list of names we were going over, pages and pages.
I remember some of those, like Citizen, was that
one? Yeah, Citizen was one. You liked a couple.
That was like a finalist, wasn't it?
It was. You liked, I think, Citizen and a couple other finalists at that time.
Yeah.
So that's a lot long ago. I remember you liked them maybe years later. I'm not sure. In any case, my, at the time, partner, Curtis, came up with the name Gradient. And he meant it as a beer gradient. And I immediately fell in love. And I was like voting for it and vying for it, going, yes, yes, yes. And then time passed, challenges occurred, and they lost interest in pursuing Gradient, my partners at that time. And I asked them very clearly over a year ago. I said, I really want to use that name still. Is that okay? And they gave me their blessing. So
cool.
I've carried it forward.
Nice. Okay, so yeah. A little sidetrack there, but you wanted to talk about it?
I want to talk about it for a second. So it's like there's... It's hard. I guess it's a... I'm going to try to speak through it as I am encountering it. Maybe if you can have any questions, just go ahead and jump right in.
Okay.
Please interrupt. So I'm feeling kind of this sort of crisis feeling coming up. And as most of our audience know, I'm currently still able to collect unemployment, but only for a short while longer. And the idea of going back to work for... someone with what I feel are very good skills and management and leadership and things like that, communication. It sounds like a nightmare to go back and be a manager at Applebee's or something like that. The workaday world. I mean, of course, I've done it forever, and I mean, I can do it. And now that I basically realize that I have this little nest egg, I kind of, no matter what, want to use it to create a job for myself. I kind of want to use it to invest in myself in some way, so the whole labor for income trap I can at least semi-sidestep. At least semi.
All paid labor degrades the mind, right?
That's what they say.
Someone said that.
That is the quote, yeah.
So we're
running into this problem with trying to get lease information from this one building, this backup plan, because the one we had been focusing on for months fell through. And we just recently got the lease information. It's pretty dull. It seems somewhat standard, but it took 2 weeks to get an email. And I can't continue to afford to do that.
Are they still using ponies to deliver the email?
It must be. It must be the Pony Express, dude. But it's from Berkeley to Richmond.
Not so express, is it?
Not so express. 2 weeks for an email. Huh. And it's like, okay, well, this thing, business, there's lots of delays. You're always can't know. Like, you can't know what's going on. You can't expect anything normal to happen. And it's all random and try to hang on. That's kind of what new businesses is so far to me. Mm. And so I'm messaging this guy every day. And I don't want to annoy him. I want to invite him to participate in this conversation. And so we finally got the lease yesterday and I read it over. It's pretty dull. And my partner is currently looking it over now.
Huh.
But if things continue at this pace, it's not going to work for me. And I can start to feel that caged animal feeling. I'm starting to feel that, like, cornered dog feeling.
Fight or flight?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm starting to feel that. And so I'm noticing it myself and I'm recognizing, like, okay, this can't just continue like this for a long time. I can't just be in maybe limbo for, like, years more. That just doesn't work for me.
Fight for your dream or...
escape.
Escape back to workaday world.
Or what I really want to do is if I can't open Gradient, I want to use that nest egg to invest in myself to do other stuff. For money, apparently.
Okay.
That's the Gradient update.
All right. Thank you for the Gradient update.
You're welcome.
I did want to kind of talk about what do you see yourself being good at? What are you good at? What do you see yourself doing if you were to start a business? You know, if you were to invest in yourself, what are your skills, talents, weaknesses, strengths?
Thanks for asking me that. I was hoping we'd talk about it. I think I could be something like a communication coach.
Hmm.
You know, there's the whole life coach thing, which kind of, I hate this like weird feeling in my neck when I say those words out loud. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm somebody who has, like, you should listen to me because I was like, I don't want to try to, there's no proselytizing soapbox interest in myself. And yet I seem to have found ways to get my needs met with these new communication tools that I've learned from others and then co-developed.
Yeah.
And there's a possibility that I could be a communication coach. Something like a life coach, but for communication. And it's all about relationships.
Life coach does have that kind of tinge of...
Don't you hear that, Tim?
Pretentiousness. Like, who are you? Exactly. What, you know everything about life?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to coach others? Mm-hmm. You figured it all out?
I sure as shit haven't. And that's why I would start with, these are the things I'm struggling with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are the challenges that I'm having. Here's my leading... These are my leading edges. Like, for example, one of my weaknesses, as you asked, is like... calendar mapping, that's a mystery to me. I'm getting better at it, but I like to make up that since I'm a good drummer, I'm very present to the time that's happening right now.
Interesting.
And so 4 days from now is like a serious blur. Like, I could be in another state. I don't know.
That's interesting. That's almost like someone who arranges music maybe would be better at doing calendar stuff.
Yeah.
If they're just arranging.
They're just arranging it all.
Segments,
yeah,
blocks.
Yeah, I agree.
Huh.
So that's the thing. The other thing I would invest in myself in is if my current Kickstarter, which is still alive, doesn't end up winning, which I'm here to report, it's not looking good.
Yeah, you know? Well,
I feel good about my video. I'm proud of myself.
Can always do it again, and
I can try other websites too. Make a whole new thing.
Yeah.
So this one looks not; it's not looking good. But I'm proud of my video, and I'm proud of my work. So that's cool.
That is cool.
And a way that I would invest in myself, I would buy what I was trying to get. I would buy.
There
I
you
would
go.
Arrange to get my drum kit, a computer, and a camera, and do that. As at the same time as doing.
If you do that, then I. Promise you that I will write some new songs and have a whole album ready to record with you.
Nice.
If you do that.
Okay. I love that promise. I'll shake your hand on that.
Let's do it.
Okay. Thank you. I'll write and record drums for you. So I would do that. I would invest in a camera. I would buy a camera that our listeners probably wouldn't care about because you're probably driving right now. You're in the shower and that's cool.
Yeah.
But I'm working on some other shows that are visual, and it will really help those.
Mm, mm.
So Yeah, I'm thinking of investing a good amount into a camera and computer and things like that. And then I would do the drumming business I was going to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I do the communication coaching, and I do some couples coaching with my partner, Rebecca, which we've actually already done, and it's gone pretty well.
Do you have a niche in mind for your coaching, like certain demographics, certain people, certain...
That's a great question. I kind of feel like my ideal client is a man, either cis or otherwise. And
what does that mean, just for the listeners?
So if you're a man who wasn't assigned to be a man when you were born, but you're a man now, that still counts to me. So anyone who feels that they are a man, then that would count.
Cisgendered?
Cisgendered means that the term? Like, that's what I am. I was born and assigned the gender male, and I've kept it in my active life. There's other parts of that whole question I'm still learning, and I mean, as far as all the ways of communicating, understanding, holding space for everyone, and they're all rainbowic interpretations of gender and sexuality. I'm very open to whatever anyone has to say about that.
Do you think it's overkill, like the amount of jargon and terms and vocabulary? And
usually I think with concepts like this, we get an overkill of jargon, terms, and vocabulary, and then there's a large simplification that occurs.
Tapers off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's cool. I'm down with what everybody else, like, that's not my fight, you know?
Right.
I was born the gender I feel.
Sure.
And that's someone else's fight. So I get that, and I'll be supportive. So I want to be able to, my ideal client is a man who is age-wise, like, you know, 20 to 65, and that they are... some things in their life are working okay. Like they made a phone call to me, or they have a job, or there's something, like things are going, but there's trouble. There's rockiness. There's issues with relationships. There's trouble communicating with bosses, friends, coworkers, partners, things like that.
Mm.
And what I can do is you can enter me into the conversation, and I can find pragmatic real-time solutions to getting needs met.
Mm. Needs coach.
Yeah, maybe needs coach. Maybe strategies coach. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It's a mystery and interesting. So that's kind of my ideal client about the whole sort of life coach thing.
Yeah. So strengths are what? Drums, communication?
Brewing. I'd maybe invest in some ways in brewing too. Brewing Tej. I'm not exactly sure how. That's a thing, but it could work.
What is Tej?
Tej is my award-winning, based on African honey wine that I've made. And yeah, it's great. It's a 10.5% raspberry malted honey wine.
Tej is a honey wine?
Tej is a honey wine, and it predates mead by a lot.
Hmm.
Because Ethiopia is a much older civilization than any of the European civilizations. So,
is that the earliest liquor?
No, beer.
Beer
in Africa predates Tej.
Huh. What about wine?
No, beer is the oldest.
Beer is the oldest.
Huh. Yeah, to my knowledge. Now, any historians out there that can throw me some proof otherwise, please do. Otherwise, I'm pretty sure it's beer. So yeah, those would generally be the things that I would want to invest in myself in and try to flower. I think that's about it.
Cool. Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Scary, exciting. Mm-hmm. Are things that are fun not scary the first time, or are they always scary the first time?
Hmm.
Do you know it's fun right away, or when do you know it's fun?
I think usually, say fun, like say a trampoline house,
mm-hmm.
a place where all the floor and walls are trampolines. Mm-hmm. I have fun there when that happens.
Mm.
The first time I've taken people, they've been scared, but then usually the smiling starts because they realize that you can just sort of fly, and that's really fun.
That does sound fun.
Yeah.
Huh.
Now, would you be scared if we went to the trampoline place? Would you think you'd be scared to hurt yourself at first?
Yeah, that would be my fear. It's hurting myself.
Yeah.
But quickly, I would get into it, I think. A friend of mine had a trampoline as a kid, and, you know, I skateboarded, And we would take, we took the wheels off the deck. So we just had the deck. And so we would trampoline on the deck and kind of do moves on the board.
I did that
as
too.
As we jumped up and down.
That was good.
That was a lot of fun. We also took our decks kind of snowboarding. Tried to kind of snowboard with our decks one time.
Did it work?
Yeah. Not really.
Cool. Okay. Would you say that all fun things are a little scary at first?
Maybe not all. I would say they're probably, they're uncertain at first.
At least there's some unknowns.
Yeah. Cause you don't, you kind of approach it like, I don't know what, you know, I don't know if this is going to be fun or not. Let's try it.
Sure. Can you give me an example of something you approached for the first time?
Skateboarding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Scary at first. Because the thing's moving, there's injury, danger. You got to learn the skill, but it becomes fun once you get kind of the rudiments down, right? Kind of guitar, too, or, you know, musical instruments.
What was scary about it's guitar?
Well, not so much scary, but just uncertainty. How do I do this? What's going on? Is this, am I doing this right, wrong, et cetera?
Maybe that's something there. Maybe there's something interesting about the context of uncertainty and how perhaps it is actually fun once you realize the fear isn't required for the task.
I think uncertainty is, yeah, it's crucial. Uncertainty, mystery, dreams. We need these things. And, you know, people ask me, what kind of music do you like and stuff? It took me a while to have this as an answer, but I think I want, in music, I want risk. But that's like a crucial thing that I need. Needs to be some kind of risk. Especially with playing music.
You make music that has some risk in it, too. Like, folks, when you hear Aubrey's album that we are going to make, you're going to hear some really excellent, like, you're going to hear melodies that are soothing to the mind. They fit right in the pocket, and they go how you wish they go, and it's good. And then you're going to be surprised, and there's going to be some danger and some intrigue with the music I've heard of yours that I hope I get to record with you.
What's the danger? What's the uncertainty?
Well, like, for example, you have other kinds of riffs that I've heard you play that, like, have this nice... It's a good way of taking a step. It's like a step into another kind of feeling zone. Like, for example, you have that track where you're strumming along, and then all of a sudden it switches into 6/4, and the drums get crazy.
Oh, yeah. Was that the song you and I did?
How's that go?
Was that the song you and I did?
Mm-hmm. You wrote it. I just played along.
The,
When she loved...
Oh. Yeah, I thought you were talking about the Vampire on the Edge of a Volcano.
Oh, that's amazing, too.
Our hit.
That is our hit. This isn't our single. It's our hit, though. I think our single is...
Solving
Crimes.
Yeah. That's a little more video-friendly.
Yeah.
I know what... Yeah, you're talking about... Streetlights, that tune.
Streetlights.
It's kind of like gentle and folksy, and then it goes into a heavy...
Full-on metal.
Strange part.
That's great.
And, you know, people are always like, well, you need another part. You need another part. You ever heard that?
Uh-huh.
Oh, this song needs another part.
Uh-huh.
Why? Is there like a council who's going to be like, your song didn't have enough parts? So sometimes I kind of bristle at that. Like, it needs to have another part. Does it?
Yeah.
I mean... There are plenty of pop songs that are one part.
Yeah, with little variations.
Yeah.
It's one fucking part. And there's a million more who are two parts.
Right.
They're just two individual parts, and that's it. It's a whole song. And then three is most pop music.
Yep.
You have a verse, chorus, bridge, you know, that's right. And that's what you do. And then you're getting fancier than that. You're throwing on an intro, and then it's like intro, verse, chorus, bridge.
Interlude or something.
Verse, chorus, ending.
Maybe. Yeah. It's kind of like whatever the song demands, that's what the song needs.
Mm-hmm. How do we know what the song's demanding?
Well, that's an artistic choice.
How do you know what the song's demanding?
It depends on the song. But basically, by listening to it. I don't know. The process for me is more, it's an evolutionary process. It's an additive, organic process of writing a song. Usually chords, some kind of riff, and then humming over that, and that grows into parts and lyrics, essentially. Maybe it's a question of empathy and imagination. What does a song require? What is the song? I mean, you know, you hear a lot of times the song writes itself, or the movie demanded this scene. You hear directors say that. Like, it takes on a life of its own. And it's telling you what it needs next. And I think that's kind of a nexus point of flow, in the psychological sense of flow, and empathy and imagination.
I like that. I can identify that when I'm writing music on my phone, as I like to do. It usually starts with me just fucking around with making noises.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on. I'm trying a new tool out, and I'm just fucking around with making noises. And then I stumble on something cool. I'm like, that's cool. And then I have that. And then I'm like, okay, what drums would I put to that? And then I put that in. And then I go, okay, what does it need after that? I'm like, it needs to build up after this. I mean, that's a cool intro, but it's got to, I mean, there needs to be a build, and then play with some other tool or something like that.
So you usually don't start with drums? You start with something else?
Sometimes I start with drums. Sometimes I start with just playing around with sounds. Either way is fine. What I really like to do when I have regular access to a drum kit is write like maybe a third or half of a song, drums first. And then collaborate, maybe a few of those actually, and collaborate with different people. Like, see what they would write on top of the drums I wrote.
Ah, I see.
For example,
You're not writing drums to a guitar part that you have in your head. You're just writing
drum parts to a metronome. And then others could maybe try out putting stuff over it. That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Will be cool.
Will be cool.
So, yeah, risk in music. And humor, too. You know, like black metal, death metal. There's a lot of humor in that.
There's some tongue-in-cheek, and there's some cheese.
There's some cheese and some tongue-in-cheek.
You got to let some of that cheese out, because if you try to be super serious metal, people are going to give you cheese. Because it's going to be a little bit going to be silly.
Like heavy-handed?
Okay, if you think about certain occult-like Norwegian black metal bands, some of them try to be... A lot of them, I think, attempt not to express comedy. And it happens anyway, because we're all human and funny stuff happens.
Right.
So I think there's maybe some kind of good amount of... If you're trying to make a serious musical project, like, for example, my black metal band, Nilotep, it's a serious musical project. And over the years, the amount of comedy has been... slowly allowed to eat in the tiniest way. Because I've been jumping like a clown up and down from year one. But the rest of the band was like, you know, we really want to, you know, what do we want to portray here? And I was like, okay, fair enough. And then we realized this comedy is happening constantly. It just is what's going on at practice, at shows, in the car. It's always like, what is funny?
Yeah. And why deny that? You know? Yeah. Like, what's so serious?
And now we're, I think all of our stuff includes a little bit of comedy.
Cool. Nice.
Must exist in metal. Like, I think a band that does that well is the Black Dahlia Murder. They make seriously cool metal, and they're funny in their videos. So it's like you get to enjoy really first-class musicianship, in my view. And you can have a chuckle about people in funny monkey suits, and it's, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Okay. That's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Music can be super serious, but the video is kind of comedic. Yeah. I think there's like a lot of humor in jazz too.
Oh yeah, what do you think? What do you mean?
Not a huge fan of jazz, but just like some of the change ups, you know. And you're kind of like chuckle, like, oh, that's
okay,
interesting or weird, you know.
Some musical trick,
yeah.
That you can smell that maybe an audience member wouldn't smell or something,
or weird key change or whatnot.
You know,
I think there's humor in jazz, and certainly rock and roll. I mean, rock and roll has everything. Yeah. That's why it's never going to die, because it basically contains everything, all other genres almost, you know?
Rock and roll is the roots of all metal.
Yeah.
And, you know, rock and roll goes back to, you know, blues before that. And, yeah, it's spread out from a lot of African-American music that ended up becoming crazier and crazierly popular by often non-African-American people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting now how much rock and roll still exists today in metal. It's like right there, right in your face. A rock setup of songs, like riffing style. I mean, it's just still there.
4/4.
Yeah.
Intro, verse, chorus.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Like drum beat.
Right.
It's still there.
Rock 1, rock 2.
Rock 1.
Those are names for drum beats.
Yeah. They're there all day.
Rock, you can have violins, fiddles, strings, keyboards, synthesizers, pianos, Rhodes, six string, steel string, six string bass, stand up bass. Anything goes in rock and roll. It's great.
It's
true. Know?
It's true.
It's so great. Long live rock.
Long live rock. I mean,
people ask me what kind of music I play, and I'm usually like, I don't know, rock.
Rock.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, I try to give them a bunch of names. Rock. Acoustic symphonic black metal.
Yeah. What other country? There's a lot of humor.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's like self-directed too.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm such a chit bag. I got a bottle of poop and a bottle of pee, and you know, my wife just left me. You know.
There's a lot of my wife just left me, and my truck died, and my dog died.
Like, achy, breaky heart. Like,
oh, my God. Dude, silly. That song
was permeated
into my childhood so much that I made up alternate lyrics for one of my mom's friends.
Huh.
And it was just the chorus, and it was,
right.
Don't sell my heart, my Debbie achy heart. Just don't think you'd understand. You know how that goes?
Yeah,
because my mom really liked pop country, and I mean, my experience was it was drilled into my head very non-consensually, but, you know, maybe I'll take a look at that. But,
yeah, a lot of humor in that shit.
Yeah, there was a lot of comedy in that. And, country music before that is really dark, though. Like, you think the stuff I actually like, you know, like
like Hank Williams?
Yeah, like Hank Williams stuff. Also more, Johnny Cash.
Oh yeah. He's super dark.
Yeah. He's so black metal.
Yeah.
It's his evil chords and his songs about death. It's like, well, okay.
Yeah. Jingle jangly songs about death, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, there's some humor to that. The disparity between, you know, songs that sound all jangly and pleasant and the subject matter is really morbid.
Hank Williams snuck that in too.
Yeah.
He snuck in dark shit into stringly jingly songs, which is cool. I guess, you know, I guess our acoustic albums may be kind of doing that too, but it's not really dark though. It's funny because now our lyrics are all about, I mean, it's, you'll see, check it out.
They're all about stand-up comics.
Yeah. All of our lyrics are about stand-up comics. Nilotep. It actually translates to stand-up love or something.
Right.
So there's this musical thing that's come up, and I have a confession to make about it, and I want to ask you about it too.
Okay.
Prince.
Oh yeah.
Just died. A great hero of music, really like hyper talented person.
Yeah, he's basically a prodigy. I mean,
yeah, it is. I'd say that is. He is a musical prodigy of voice, piano, guitar, and every, you know, just, it's crazy.
I mean, you probably know that he, first two albums, he played every instrument.
I didn't know that, and here's why I didn't know that. I actually don't like anything he's made.
Yeah.
I can see the incredible talent, and I really am sad for his family and friends and fans for this loss. And a personal confession is, I didn't actually like any of the music he made. I'm not sure I've listened to one of his songs all the way through.
Probably. There's probably one or two that you...
Not by choice. Not by choice, okay. For sure.
Right, right.
I wouldn't... I've never enjoyed the sounds. And it's not like... I realize that I enjoy the... rock and roll, heavy metal, screamo, like sort some of the playful gender ambiguity, like you get the eyeliner on the and then full on girl paint in the '80s, and there what's that? What's the word I'm looking for?
Clam?
Androgyny. There's a lot of androgyny in the music that I'm very happy with and feels is well suited. And in my experience, Prince is so all the way over on basically a woman who has a penis and has sex with women. And that's like, okay, cool. Good for you. I just don't identify with that at all. No part of me wants to be Prince, like 0%.
Right.
And, I'm, the world's going to miss out on a lot of great music that he was going to make, but didn't. And, sorry that happened.
Yeah.
That's like my confession. And I want to hear what you think about it.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, everyone has their opinions and preferences. So I think that's totally legitimate. I mean, one of the points of the show is that everyone's voice is equally valid. And I was never a huge fan, you know, just kind of like appreciated him when I heard him, but I didn't own any albums. Remember those things called albums?
What's that? Sorry, I'm only 32.
A collection of songs. Long play. Yeah, I never was a fanatic or anything, you know, but it was cool. Like, we covered a Prince song.
Oh, yeah? What'd you play?
When Doves Cry.
Mm-hmm. Can you play that on bass?
I'd have to kind of relearn it, but yeah. And that was fun. That's as close as I got to Prince, was covering that song, actually.
Huh.
Well, I mean, and seeing, you know, I saw Purple Rain, not on MTV. Never had MTV, but... I don't know when I saw it, but I must have seen it. I was like, oh, it's cool.
What do you mean never had MTV? What does that
mean? We didn't have cable.
Who's we? Have you
my
ever
family.
Lived in a home that had MTV in it?
Yeah, but after I moved out of my parents' house.
Oh, okay. Got it. So as a kid, you didn't have MTV.
As a kid, we didn't have MTV. Nor did we have a microwave.
That's probably good.
I think overall pretty good, but, you know, it's just a fact. Nothing more to it than that.
Well, I don't own a microwave.
Yeah. Saw Purple Rain. That was pretty cool. Album's pretty... I guess that's probably the album I like the best of his. Purple Rain.
Can you name some songs on that album?
Well, that's When Doves Cry is on there, right?
Uh-huh.
The Beautiful Ones, I think it's on there.
Beautiful Ones.
Are there some of his hits on there? Raspberry Beret? Or is that the previous album?
I don't know.
Anyway, that shows you how much of a...
See, that's why I asked.
Yeah. Shows you how much of a fan I am.
Yeah.
Which is not very much. And you can not be a fan and still
appreciate
and respect and honor.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
kind of where I'm at.
I think that's an important thing. I think you and I are in somewhat of an agreement about, like, wow, absolute virtuoso. Don't really like their music. That's okay. It's like,
okay.
I think having dialogues where that ends, where that's okay, and the other person's like, yeah. And the other person might be like, no, Prince wrote my soul down and then sang it to me. And that's cool.
Also valid.
It's like, that's what I mean. Dual validity.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Always.
Cool. Let me listen. What are you talking? Give me like a favorite riff, you know, put it on for me. Let me hear it. Let me jam with you on that. I'll check it out. And I mean,
yeah,
they're both true.
Think about Dream Theater. Yeah. Obviously, technically.
Obviously amazing. Not really into it.
Technically, very, very impressive.
Very.
In terms of songwriting, melody, hooks, something that really touches your heartstrings and tugs at your soul, doesn't do it for me. That's just my opinion. Still think those guys are great and, like, they're amazing.
Uh-huh. Amazing.
And honor their ability and what they're doing.
Yeah. Wish them well. Lots of luck in the future.
It's just not going to be...
It won't be in my computer.
Yeah, it's not going to be in my Discman. my LP man.
Well, they had LP players portable, in cars.
Yeah, portable record cool. player. I remember 8-tracks. Very tail end.
Very tail?
Yeah.
My grandpa had reel to reel we used to listen to, but it wasn't mine ever.
There you go.
That was cool.
That was cool.
We had 8-track, reel to reel, record, all of it. It was neat.
Yeah. That reel to reel, you probably could have, like, saved it and used it for recording or something.
He had a wall of this stuff, and I was like, it's old junk now. That's all I could think at that age.
Let's go build a boat.
Yeah, let's go build. And we did. We built a boat. But, if I had that stuff now, that'd be really great.
Hmm.
I actually have a ton of cassettes. We've talked about this before.
We need to talk about this.
My computer. So, again, second call out. Asked you before, asking again. Anyone has that machine? You want to mail it to us? We'll mail it back with, like, a prize in it.
A 4-track or just a cassette to cassette?
Cassette tape to computer transmodulator or information.
If we just had a cassette, if we just had a cassette deck with a headphone out, we could do it.
Cool, then. Never mind. We'll just get that.
No, I mean, the offer stands. Send us your old cassette equipment.
You'll hear great music. I assure you.
That's.
I assure you, you'll hear great music.
That's a show with a lot of setup.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of prep time, but that would be so fun to just go through our cassettes. Yeah. Hours and hours. We'd have to do a couple installments.
And then maybe we could narrow it down for the audience's pleasure.
It'd be so fun, though. Would be discovering our own stuff again, you know?
Yeah.
Some stuff you obviously remember, but then you'll hear something and be like, whoa, that's right.
I did record that. What is that?
I am so embarrassed. that's an exciting episode. Yeah. Maybe that should be like an anniversary, 25 or something.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Today's show is brought to you by Final Corp. With over 50 years of experience, Final Corp is constantly breaking new culinary ground with their selection of unique and interesting mayonnaise flavors, including Poison Ivy, Baby Diaper, Stripper, and Rotting Butterscotch. Thanks again, Final Corp.
Final Corp. It'll be fine.
Okay. Thanks again, Final Corp. And thanks to our listeners. We appreciate it.
Thanks, listeners.
We got humor in music. We got risk in music. I think of the kind of lyrics that I like. I would say the kind of lyrics I like, there's not a lot of use of the words baby, honey, ooh.
Yeah.
What's that Chili Peppers song where he's like, yeah, I said no. Or it's the other way around. No, I said yeah. I always thought that was a funny. I always thought that was a funny lyric.
Yeah.
Guys, I have a cool lyric. No, yeah. Anthony, sounds great. Let's do it.
Good job. Are you just gonna jump around when you do that? Okay, cool.
Yeah. But too many babies. Like I think U2 was the first band where I was kind of like, why he's using baby too much? too much of the word baby.
Yeah, he's now, rhyming baby with baby on most of his songs. Another band. Like it.
Not a huge fan. Yeah, but the word love, I'm okay with it. Totally. I wouldn't say it's overused. I wouldn't say it's underused. It's just used because it's such a powerful placeholder.
It's so permeable. I'm okay with it.
But baby, not so much. Honey, not so much. Kind of sounds odd. Me saying that because I love Zeppelin and they're always saying baby and honey and shit. But I like lyrics that are, I guess, have a range of vocabulary and are concise.
Concise. How do you call concise?
Well, there's that Zepp lyric in 10 Years Gone. He's like, we are eagles of the nest. The nest is in our soul. Right. I'm not sure what he means, but he's saying enough that it's like provocative. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued. What is he talking about? By concise, I just mean not a lot of flowery language, getting to the point quickly. Brevity is the soul of wit. So said Shakespeare. Another way of saying that is keep it simple, stupid, right? Mm-hmm. You can say more with less. It's that 80-20 thing we're talking about.
Hmm. Important ratio. Comes up a lot.
Yeah. So you can cut a lot back, and sometimes you don't sacrifice meaning. You actually gain meaning. So I think I like lyrics that have that.
That have conciseness. Have those qualities. Wide vocabulary and concision. What?
Yeah, concision, wide vocabulary. An interesting narrative or imagery.
Cool. Okay. That's a pretty good answer.
Interesting rhyme schemes, but that's not a requirement, you know. But it's a hard question to answer, actually. I'm just thinking about it now for the first time. What kinds of that? Maybe that's the question of the episode. What do you look for in lyrics?
I look for integrity. When I'm listening to lyrics, I look for what they're saying to be good for them and good for the world.
Huh.
I do look for conciseness. Listening to you, I realize that's also important to me. If it just rolls out and keeps blabbering without getting to points in between, you know, like you need like markers as you're going. Cause that's what I like. Like when it's like I think what you said is good as well. Like a narrative and or imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Is cool, but there could be other things too. There could be like feeling or mm-hmm. mood.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fine for me. As long as
in the lyrics,
what I'm looking for in the lyrics could be feeling and kind of the way the words are, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I would also look for in lyrics as I stall to answer is, I like them when they are told kind of in an aggressive way. I don't know if that counts as lyrical, but I think when it's like more assertive
presentation of the lyrics. Yeah,
present and assertive and like strong. I think like when people are telling something that is clearly awesome and they're spelling out how cool it is. Like I'm drawn to that as a lyrical style.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think mystery too.
Oh.
Like, what is he talking, like, you know, I don't know what he's talking about. And that's part of the experience.
Hmm.
I do like that, too. So there's a lot of things there, huh? Music is weird, though, too, because it's such an ephemeral art form. I think I mentioned this in, like, episode one. Ballet is probably more ephemeral. There's one performance, right? You can't really record it, and I mean, you can videotape it and play it back, but it doesn't. Totally different experience. Music, you can get a little closer to the performance. You're replicating the performance by listening to the CD or whatever.
Mm.
But music, too, is very ephemeral. It's just this very short, encapsulated, like, narrative or experience or emotion. You know, it's just weird, isn't it? Isn't it weird? I mean, would I be a musician this long if music wasn't captivating in that way? Probably not.
Yeah, why do you keep making music?
Because the more you learn, the wider the vista of unlearned things becomes.
Hmm, yeah. You get to see more of what you don't know.
It's like, oh, I learned scales, so you get to the first floor of the house. And it's like, oh, okay, there's a yard. Nice. It's a fenced-in yard. And then you learn a little bit more about the guitar, and then you get up to the second floor. And you see, oh, wow. It's actually other yards beyond this yard. Hmm. And so on and so forth. So you get to the top, quote unquote mastery, which I don't believe in, but you get really good and you realize that you have, your view stretches to the horizon.
Mm.
You're way less restrained and you're able to improvise, experiment, synthesize ideas better than ever, which just opens up your possibilities infinitely. So that's what's great about learning.
I like that.
And that's what's great about music. It's kept me going with music for a while.
It's a good answer.
I don't think I've ever articulated it out loud like that, but that seems to work. And you can convey situations, feelings, emotions, stories to other people in, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. It's possible to do that. And to me, that's like, that's kind of like a magic thing, magic act.
To convey a story in 4 or 5 minutes?
Yeah, to contribute to transport someone else into maybe what you were experiencing when you wrote this song or what the song's about. It's almost like an emotional story that you can put, the listener is put into that context.
Hmm.
But is also interpreting it in their own way. You know, it's not going to be exactly like your experience. So it's like a little magical act of art.
Hmm. I would akin that to a similar thing on your arm. It's like a magical act that you, I mean, you crashed, and it appears now the scab over is like a magical act. Like, you don't have to think about it. You don't have to, like, do anything, really.
Mm.
Your arm is regrowing all that shit with taking food that you're eating and transmuting it into you and then doing it all the right places totally perfectly over and over and over. That's fucking magical.
Mm.
Akin to. So I think I feel a great bit of fortunate. I feel very fortunate to be present to those things.
Mm. Yeah, music's lots to talk about there.
Mm-hmm.
Risk, humor, the appeal of music.
Making it, how to make it.
Why we make it.
Why we make it. Why we keep making it.
Why do you think we first made it?
I don't know. I had that guitar. It was given to me when I was 12.
Well, I mean humans.
Oh.
That's a cool guitar, though.
That's not bad.
Maybe humans, like ritual, like a ritual thing or something?
Well, the first drum is the heartbeat, right?
Right. The origins of music. And why does it have such a hold on us?
I think when I first made power chords, which was the first chords I learned, it was just like, I felt like very powerful or magical or something. But it was like making heavy music through an amp with power chords on a guitar, electric guitar. I was like, whoa, this is cool.
Yeah, it's like sorcery.
Yeah, it was like sorcery. And I was like, this sound makes me feel something, and I'm making the sound. Whoa. Yeah. Okay, what else can I do? And then here we are.
Do you remember like when you first were able to feel that two notes were in sync, or feel that the note you were singing and the note you were playing somehow meshed up in a pleasing way?
When did I first have my voice and my guitar come together and be joyous about it? It was probably like, what band was I in? So when that happened. You know, I think that probably happened in His Prophet and Scepter.
Mm.
So like mid-2000s.
Mm.
We were playing metal, I was playing guitar, and I had vocal parts that I recorded and sang and played guitar and sang and growled and screamed on that EP while playing guitar. And it was cool, and it worked, and we recorded it, and it was good.
And the singing parts, you could kind of hear like, oh, that, wow, that kind of fits with what I'm playing on the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Good times.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Not a specific moment, but just like, okay. Huh.
You can do them
like if I really pay attention, I can tell why that sounds good. And you know, it's basically a wavelength thing. You can like tuning strings, you can feel that the wavelengths match up.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the whoa 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 whoa, and as the whoa 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 gets slower, you know that wavelengths are matching up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like whoa 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 whoa, whoa.
And then you're tuned,
and then you're tuned.
J, which I think was the note you were just playing.
J, yeah.
Can you tune me to J? Maybe we could do a promo for the Missouri Lounge.
Yeah, Missouri Lounge, San Pablo Avenue,
yeah,
Berkeley, California.
They're a fine establishment. It's a nice blend of dive bar, hangout, and eatery
mm-hmm.
where usually everyone's having a good time.
Yes, with an open patio in back.
Mm-hmm. Smoking's permitted.
Heaters. Medicine and smoking is permitted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, check them out if you get a chance. No affiliation with Final Corp.
No. But we have done some work there, and there, you know, the sunshine or rain. They've been, they're nice. It's good.
Yeah, Prince. I mean, Bowie this year, too.
Yeah.
Prince was so, like, eccentric.
I think everyone is a little eccentric. And maybe if it's 0.001%.
Yeah.
Might be just the way that they think about farting or something. That, you know, I mean, but they might not even tell anybody. But they're eccentric in that one way where they're like, okay, when I fart, I actually spin around and sniff it because I'm so excited. But they wouldn't, everything else about them is totally non-eccentric.
Mm.
See, but I create stories like that.
Eccentric is more of a cumulative overall. Like, they have a lot of those things. I think that's what people mean by eccentric. But, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say is, I've been told I'm eccentric.
Huh.
By people, and it might have something to do with that I make stories up like the one I just did. What do you think about eccentricism? What do you think about that? I mean, it's like, is it real? Is it necessary? What?
Well, in astronomy, there's such a thing as the eccentricity of planetary bodies, which refers to how much they deviate from their kind of center. I always like that.
Eccentricity,
yeah. Just like the human quality. So yeah, it's a degree of being off from the quote unquote normal. That's what eccentricity is.
Got it.
And I think most people are probably eccentric in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
Yeah, I mean normality in human terms is so strange. I don't know what normal is.
Yeah.
The normal thought patterns, the normal body, the normal human experience, is that even a thing that we can talk about cogently? Because I can't.
We could probably come up with examples that might paint a general picture of that.
Like American Dream?
Sure.
2.5 kids, picket fence?
Sure, yeah, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But does any single person actually embody that? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Hopefully not.
Probably not. It's probably something like perfection or balance. They're not really possible.
Yeah. Perfection doesn't exist anyway.
No. Neither does balance, I don't think.
Give me closer approximations to perfection any day.
Sure. Well, that's all you can have.
Oh, thank you.
That and nothing else. I think that's a good metaphor for life is peacefully accepting that all we get is closer approximations to perfection. Mm-hmm. We never actually get it. And so there's like a peace in that,
I think. Yeah, and it's a good motivator too in the proper context, you know.
Yeah.
Because to think, okay, I've mastered, you know, cup stacking. Done.
Okay.
That's not as interesting as saying, oh, well, what's next?
It's like I've found a genetic sample of a dragon and I'm bringing them back to life in my laboratory. That's like, okay, where's your laboratory?
There we go.
I want to see that. You have a dragon? Yeah, it's like a flying reptile monster. Okay. How big is it? 90 feet tall? Are you sure? Is there like a cage set up or something? You know,
yeah.
It'd be interesting. I'd ask questions.
That's imagination at work, it sounds like.
Maybe. And if you got guy stacking cups all day, it's like, okay, are you stacking like 500 by yourself? I mean, like, is that happening? Or is it like...
You compete and you are the world master of cup stacking.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah.
You know, it's a cool skill, and if someone can get something out of it, cool. But I think 50 years of that would maybe have a very sad person at the end.
Maybe if they were only doing that.
That's my life goal. I'm number 7 and I'm going to be number 4 if I, you know, for 50 years.
Well, I'd like to speak to dragons in literature.
Okay, please do.
And I had this idea for a story. You know, because so many fantasy stories are like, and even I think it's a Nabokov story with a dragon in it, and it's kind of, you know, ho hum. Dragons are just like people, etc. You know, their psychology is just like people. And I was thinking, well, if their psychology is just like people, why don't we have stories about super fucked up dragons, like sociopaths, psychopaths,
Flight of the Dragons.
Okay, so one.
One.
there's one.
Have you seen Flight of the Dragons?
Or like schizophrenic, you know, imagine a knight goes to conquer the dragon.
Yeah.
And then he realizes the dragon's schizophrenic. But he has some psychology skills, so they actually sit down and it's like a therapy session. The knight and the dragon, instead of fighting,
work it out.
They work it out, and we get to really plumb the depths of this mental psychosis that the dragon is in. I mean, wouldn't that be interesting? Isn't that more interesting than just Prince Valiant slaying murders the dragon and whatever?
A rare reptile, yeah. It's like, no, that's not as cool.
Yeah. I told that to my brother, and he was like, oh, that's great. That's cool. Yeah, schizophrenic dragon. That'd be cool. It's like, yeah, or OCD, an OCD dragon. He's super organized. He flies out of his cave, then comes back before he can really fly out for the day. You know, he's got all these quirks. Yeah, he's got these quirks, you know. Roll the boulder in front of the cave three times just to make sure. You know, wash your talons in the lake. Like five or six times.
40 times a day total.
See that?
Before and after all urinations, yeah. Five times each. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. That's
be funny.
Maybe funny. Yeah. That's interesting. I like your different ailment, mental ailment dragon story. That may be a good cartoon, man. I'd watch that cartoon.
Yeah, that'd be entertaining.
And like the knight comes in and helps him out.
Yeah. It's a huge divan, or, you know, chaise lounge that the dragon's sitting on. Anyway, I think that's a pretty tidy episode. What do you think? Name of that one? Is there a name?
Heavy Music. I'd like to acknowledge you for listening. Thank you for spending the time here today with us. Be well. See you soon.
Thanks for supporting the show, everybody, and please feel free to visit empathyandimagination.com to comment on question of the episode.
Check out our podcast on iTunes. You can get it there for free. And if you'd like to share it, please do. Thank you. This has been
another one in the can. Good to go.